content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello and welcome to Heard Any Good Books Lately? A program from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. I'm George Douglas. This program is brought to you by the Friends of the North Carolina Library for the Blind and Physically Handicapped, an organization of citizens, volunteers, and patrons all interested in supporting the library and the services it provides. The Friends Group was founded in 1989 and now has more than 300 members across North Carolina. If you'd like to join the Friends Group yourself, we'll have information on how to do that later in this program. Now, this program is all about books, with special emphasis on those available from the North Carolina Library for the Blind. The library has more than 86,000 titles in its collection. Books and magazines are available in large print, braille, and talking books as well. The library has more than 11,000 patrons across the state. And if you're not a patron but are interested in becoming one, I'll have more information about that at the end of this program as well. Now, this month, we're going to take a look at some of the most popular books checked out during the months of August and September at the North Carolina Library for the Blind, and a new feature that you've not heard before on this program. I'm very excited about this. We're going to give you a list of new books that are just about ready to come out from the North Carolina Library for the Blind and be available for you to listen to. And you'll be able to call or go online and place your order today. And you'll be able to take advantage of some of these brand new books that are coming out. So stay tuned for that as well. That'll be right at the end of this program. But let's begin with one of the most popular books during the month of August. It was The Mistress by Danielle Steele. Incomparable storyteller Danielle Steele illuminates rarely glimpsed precincts of unimaginable wealth and power, where love and freedom are the most dangerous desires of all. Natasha Leonova's beauty saved her life. Discovered on a freezing Moscow street by a Russian billionaire, she has lived for 7 years under his protection, immersed in rarefied luxury, while he pursues his activities in a dark world that she guesses at but never really sees. Her home is the world, often on one of Vladimir Stanislav's spectacular yachts, manned by scores of heavily armed crew members. Natasha's job is to keep Vladimir happy, ask no questions, and be discreet. Now, she knows her place and the rules. She feels fortunate to be spoiled and protected, and is careful not to dwell on Vladimir's ruthlessness or the deadly circles he moves in. She experiences only his kindness and generosity and believes he will always keep her safe. She is unfailingly loyal to him in exchange. Theo Luca is the son of a brilliant, world-famous, and difficult artist, Lorenzo Luca, who left his wife and son with a fortune in artwork they refused to sell. Lorenzo's widow, Melis, has transformed their home in St. Paul de Vence into a celebrated restaurant decorated with her late husband's paintings, and she treats it as a museum. There, on a warm June evening, Theo first encounters Natasha, the most exquisite woman he has ever seen. And there, Vladimir lays eyes on Luca's artwork. Two dangerous obsessions begin. Theo, a gifted artist in his own right, finds himself feverishly painting Natasha's image for weeks after their first meeting. Vladimir, enraged that Lorenzo's works are not for sale, is determined to secure a painting at any price. And Natasha, who knows that she cannot afford to make even one false move, nevertheless begins to think of a world of freedom that she can never experience as Vladimir's mistress. She cannot risk her safety for another man, or even have a conversation with him, as Theo longs for a woman he can never have. From Moscow to the Riviera, Paris, and London, The Mistress is a riveting tale of vast fortune, cruelty, creative genius, and daring courage, as uncompromising individuals chart a course Before Collision. Sounds like a good one. That was the most popular book at the North Carolina Library for the Blind during the month of August. Now, from The Mistress by Danielle Steele, we'll move on to another book very popular during the month of August, also by Danielle Steele, and this one is called The Award. Capturing historical events, terrifying moments of danger, tragedy, the price of war, and the invincible spirit of a woman of honor, The Award is a monumental tale from one of our most gifted storytellers, Danielle Steele's finest, most emotionally resonant novel yet. Gaëlle de Barbet is 16 years old in 1940 when the German army occupies France and frightening changes begin to occur. She is shocked and powerless when French gendarmes take away her closest friend, Rebecca Feldman, and her family for deportation to an unknown, ominous fate. Now, the local German military commandant makes Gaëlle's family estate outside Lyon into his headquarters. Her father and brother are killed by the Germans. Her mother fades away into madness. Trusted friends and employees become traitors, and Gaëlle begins a perilous journey with the French resistance, hoping to save lives to make up for the beloved friend she could do nothing to help. Now, taking terrifying risks, Gaëlle becomes a valuable member of the resistance, fearlessly delivering Jewish children to safety under the eyes of the Gestapo and their French collaborators. Then she is suddenly approached by the German commandant with an astonishing, dangerous plan to save part of France's artistic heritage. Conducted in secret, flawlessly carried out, her missions will mark her for years when she is falsely accused of collaboration at the end of the war. Orphaned and alone, she begins a new life in Paris with the ghosts of the past always close at hand. Gaëlle's life will take her from Paris to New York, from a career as a Dior model to marriage and motherhood, unbearable loss, and mature, lasting love. She returns to Paris to run a small museum honoring victims of the Holocaust. But her label as a collaborator remains until her granddaughter, a respected political journalist, ensures that her grandmother's brave acts are recognized. Now a grateful nation will finally absolve this remarkable woman and honor her as the war hero she was. The Award is what that one is called, and it is by Danielle Steele. The next book we'll take a look at today is one called The Island of Glass by Nora Roberts, the final Guardians trilogy novel from the number one New York Times bestselling author of Bay of Sighs and Stars of Fortune. As the hunt for the Star of Ice leads the six Guardians to Ireland, Doyle the Immortal must face his tragic past. 3 centuries ago, he closed off his heart, yet his warrior spirit is still drawn to the wild, and there's no one more familiar with the wild than Riley and the wolf within her. An archaeologist, Riley is no stranger to the coast of Clare, but now she finds herself on unsure footing, targeted by the dark goddess who wants more than the stars, more than the blood of the Guardians. While searching through Irish history for clues that will lead them to the final star and the mysterious island of glass, Riley must fight her practical nature and admit her sudden attraction to Doyle is more than just a fling. For it is his strength that will sustain her and give her the power to run towards love and save them all. It's called The Island of Glass by Nora Roberts. Now we'll turn to another name that you hear quite a bit on this program, Janet Ivanovich. She has over 20 Stephanie Plum novels to her credit, and this one I'm going to talk about, Turbo 23, is sure to please her fans once again. Stephanie's charisma stems from her traditional family background, coupled with her modernist viewpoint. A bounty hunter working with an edgy former street lady, Lula, Stephanie slips into one predicament after another. She relies on the equipment of her trade, a stun gun, handcuffs but no gun, and a messenger bag on her shoulder at all times while on the job. Lula, conversely, depends on her gun, along with brute force due to her size. Stephanie's working outfit, which is jeans and a t-shirt, ponytail and messenger bag trademark her. Lula brings bling to the extreme with stiletto heels and fake jewels, extravagant purses, and her Firebird. The opposites make for an unlikely but effective team. Ivanovich tells Stephanie's story in first-person narrative. Her reality differs from the traditional when it comes to romance. She is semi-engaged to Joe Morelli, Trenton's top cop, but is swept off her feet emotionally by Ranger, an ex-Special Forces operative who now runs a security company. Stephanie and Ranger cooperate on cases where covert activity can work on the outside edge of the law for good results. He's hot and she's enamored, but remains loyal to Morelli, well, part of the time. Stephanie's assignment is to bring in Larry Virgil for missing a court date after hijacking a truck full of bourbon. Now, she and Lula sit on a stakeout of his three-bay garage when an 18-wheeler barrels into the lot, stopping at the gate. Virgil steps down from the driver's seat to unlock the gate. Lula spots him, shouting, "It's him! Hold on while I get my gun." She bolts from the Firebird, racing across the street in her stilettos, waving the firearm and yelling "Bond Enforcement" at the top of her lungs. Meanwhile, Stephanie, who is against gunplay, shouts, "No shooting!" but leaves the car to join the chase. Virgil takes off, stopping at the Firebird, jumps in, and barrels off. Beyond exasperation, Lula jumps into the 18-wheeler, yells Stephanie into the passenger side, and commandeers the truck. Brushing aside a trash dumpster, Lula's joyride to recover the Firebird comes to a halt when she's pulled over for running a stoplight. Virgil gets away, but Lula vows to get her car back before it's hacked up at a chop shop. Ivanovich's bizarre plot unfolds on the page when the police and Ranger, who arrive to help Stephanie, break the lock on the Bogart ice cream freezer truck and open the back gate. A frozen body covered in chocolate and nuts falls to the ground. A human resources employee is identified as the dead chocolate-covered human Bogart bar. Ranger's company is hired to install a foolproof security system at Bogart, and Stephanie goes undercover as a line employee to find a disgruntled jobber who may be the murderer. Thrown together with Ranger, her Catholic upbringing and moral fiber are challenged. Still, she balances two lovers on a careful tightrope. Stephanie's affinity for dangerous situations and compromising predicaments lands her in trouble much of the time, but she is saved from each and every catastrophe by her good friends. Ivanovich's secondary characters, Lula, Morelli, Ranger, and Stephanie's grandma, are as endearing to the reader as Stephanie herself. This is number 24 in this delightful series, and it cannot come soon enough for Ivanovich readers. And once again, that one is called Turbo 23 by Janet Ivanovich, another Stephanie Plum novel. Now we'll turn to our next book here. It's by J.D. Robb. This one is called Apprentice in Death. Lieutenant Eve Dallas finds herself with a serial killer or killers on her hands when, on a frosty winter day, three people are shot to death at the Woolman Rink in Central Park. The second attack comes to fruition in Times Square, where four individuals are shot, one of whom is a cop. Eve's team, including her husband Rourke, a technical genius, discovers the nest from where the first shots were fired, and they determine that a tactical laser rifle with a range of up to 2 miles was the weapon used by the sniper. They also realize that two people are responsible for the shootings, a man named Mackie and his daughter Willow, known as Will, an attempt to hide her gender. Once the team learns that more than one person is to blame, they surmise that more killings will take place. But are these snipers targeting specific people or random victims? Shortly after the Times Square shootings comes the discovery of a hit list comprised of initials, not names. Eve and her New York Police Security Department realize that the number of those killed are just collateral damage to hide who the real target is. The third attack is a bloody massacre outside Madison Square Garden. Eve and her colleagues are determined to track down the killers, and readers will find it quite gratifying to watch the narrative unfold with all of the details of the investigation. Since the story takes place in the future, author J.D. Robb offers new technology to enhance the way police do their job. The first attack in Central Park took the lives of a teenage girl who was spinning on the ice in a red skin-tight outfit, a doctor, and a teacher. What in the world did these individuals have in common? The same question applies to the other two killings, and Eve understands the pattern that leads to the collateral damage. Apprentice in Death is a fast-moving police procedural that rushes readers to finish quickly. It is charged with suspense and a sense of reality. Robb has done her homework, and in this, her 43rd In Death novel, setting it in the near future New York City, puts a new slant on its recurring characters. This is a book to snuggle up with as fall turns to winter, according to the reviewer Barbara Lipkin Gershenbaum, and she wrote that review in September of last year. Once again, that book is called Apprentice in Death by J.D. Robb. Now here's a review of another very popular name that you hear on this program a lot. Below the Belt is the name of the book by Stuart Woods. Stone Barrington and his latest love, Holly Barker, have just landed in Santa Fe. They are seeking some alone time when suddenly the phone rings. It's Will Lee. Stone is a good friend of the former president and his wife, the current president, Kate Lee, who is also Holly's boss. Will invites them to the opera, and Stone accepts. When Stone and Holly arrive at the location to which they've been invited, Stone is stopped by a Secret Service man who escorts him to an SUV parked not far from the house. Will is waiting for him and has a story to tell. Years ago, Kate was the deputy director for intelligence at the CIA. She reveals that a man named Ed Rawls, who was a CIA mole for the Russians, went to prison. Will pardoned him after he had served 7 years. Before Will ran for president, Kate had a meeting with Ed, who told her that the man who dropped out of the race for his second presidential term, Joe Adams, was in the early stages of Alzheimer's disease. Nobody else knew except for Ed. Joe had picked Will to make the run. Will's story is a long one. One part of it is the revelation that while Ed was in prison, he wrote an account of his years at the agency, including the end of his career and how he surreptitiously helped Kate's campaign. What he wrote is explosive information that cannot be released to the public. It is a book written from memory in prison. He gives Joe the manuscript and all the backup documents and computer disks. Joe and his wife want the material out of their house. Joe appears to believe that some of Ed's revelations might hurt Will's legacy and interfere with Kate's reelection. Will tells Stone that he must pick up the package that very night. He gives Stone the address, and this starts the propulsion suspense. Stone arrives at the Adams house, and before he knows it, he is handcuffed to a suitcase with a long chain. Joe will not reveal what the case contains, but Stone agrees to put it in his safe. Soon Stone meets with Ed, who tells him that the package is his insurance against the wrong people getting a hold of the wrong case. The suspense continues until a murder is committed. Stuart Woods can always be depended upon to deliver a page-turner, and Below the Belt certainly fits into that category. His characters are lined with a strong hand, and the plot is attention-grabbing. Once again, that book is called Below the Belt by Stuart Woods, and it's another one of those very, very popular Stone Barrington novels. During the months of August and September, we had several books that were very popular by the author William W. Johnstone. Three of them, in fact. Two of them are from a series called The Trail of West Books. And here is a summary of Book One. In 1848, Dooley Monahan, son of struggling Iowa pioneers, went off to pick up a new milk cow. Young Dooley never came home. Now, nearly three decades later, Dooley Monahan has become an accidental legend, managing to plant a bullet in the chest of a dangerous outlaw. All Dooley really wants is to claim his reward at a bank in Phoenix and make his way north to a gold strike he read about in a newspaper. But fate has other plans. It starts with a family slaughtered by Apaches, a dog smarter than most humans, Dooley knows, and a girl with a wounded soul. And the blood-hungry brothers of the outlaw Dooley killed will not give up their pursuit until they've avenged his death. The farther Dooley tries to head north, destiny pushes him west. His trail is populated by strange friends and dangerous enemies, strewn with bad luck and bad blood, and frequently interrupted by sudden storms of gunfire. That was The Trail of West, Book One by William W. Johnstone. Now, here is the plot for Book Two. And again, both of these were very popular during the month of August and September at the Library for the Blind. The accidental gunslinger, Dooley Monahan, has quit wandering now and settled down to a farmer's life. But when the itch for adventure gets too strong, he packs up and rides west. Along with his horse, General Grant, and Blue, a dog who's too smart for his own good, Dooley rides for the Black Hills to strike it rich in the gold fields of Colorado. But fate has other ideas. When the trigger-happy Dobbs Quig gang holds up the Omaha bank, Dooley is mistaken for one of the robbers, and a price is plastered on his head. With every lawman in the territory hot on his trail, Dooley has no choice but to join up with the murderous outlaws. If the hangman doesn't get him, his new friends will, but Dooley won't turn back. With Blue and General Grant at his side, Dooley will make his fortune come hell or high water and everything in between. And that is Book Two of the Trail of West series by William W. Johnstone. And we had one other book that was popular during the month by William W. Johnstone, and that one is called 40 Times a Killer. Here's the summary of that one. First, he became a killer. Then he became a legend. John Wesley Hardin was 15 when he killed his first man. Before his murderous ways ended, he'd killed 42 men in cold blood. One, the legend goes, just for snoring. From then on, Hardin stayed true to his calling, living a fever dream of lightning-fast draws and flying lead. By 17, Hardin had a deadly reputation for killing that drew traitors, backstabbers, and wannabe gunslingers, all for a chance to gun down the man who had turned killing into an all-American legend. Again, that book is called 42 Times a Killer by William W. Johnstone. Now, you're probably asking yourself, why haven't I heard any summaries of books by James Patterson this month? He is always on the top 10 list. Well, he is once again with a couple of his new books that are called book shots. We've read several of these on this program. These are described by Patterson as lightning-fast stories that you can devour in just a few hours, and they are impossible to stop reading. And all of these stories are original content from James Patterson. There were a couple of them that were very popular with our listeners at the North Carolina Library for the Blind, and the first one is called Private, The Royals by James Patterson. God save the Queen, but only Private can save the royal family. Private is the most elite detective agency in the world, but when kidnappers threaten to execute a royal family member in front of the Queen, Jack Morgan and his team have just 24 hours to stop them, or heads will roll, literally. That's Private, The Royals by James Patterson. That's a book shot. And the next one that was also very popular during the last couple of months was called A French Kiss, a Detective Luke Moncrief mystery, also, of course, by James Patterson. Bonjour, detective. Now watch your back. Very handsome and charming French detective Luke Moncrief joined the NYPD for a fresh start, but someone wants to make his first big case his last, and that is the way he is welcomed to New York. Again, that's called French Kiss, and it's a Detective Luke Moncrief mystery by James Patterson. There were several in that particular series, and maybe you've heard about some of those. Now, the feature that I mentioned at the beginning of the program that I'm excited to share with you is a list of upcoming books that will be available very, very soon from the North Carolina Library for the Blind and Physically Handicapped. And these will be arriving in the latter part of October and into November. Here's the list right now. Listen carefully. The first one is Dark Harvest by Norma Partridge. The next one, What Happened? By Hillary Rodham Clinton, her story about the election this past year. A Change of Climate by Hillary Mantel. The Lightkeeper's Daughter, a Mercy Falls novel by Colleen Coble. The next book is Northern Armageddon, The Battle of the Plains of Abraham, and that's by Peter McLeod and Tom Perkins. Then The Postmortal by Drew Magary. The Dressmaker's War by Mary Chamberlain. The Saboteur, a novel by Andrew Gross and Eduardo Ballerini. And finally, All by Myself Alone, a novel by Mary Higgins Clark, one of everybody's favorite mystery writers. Those are just a few of the books that will be available very soon, brand new, from the North Carolina Library for the Blind. So you can look out for them and give them a call or go online and place your order to get your copy today. And that's all for this month's edition of Heard Any Good Books Lately. I'm George Douglas. I hope you enjoyed it. If you'd like more information about how to become a patron of the North Carolina Library for the Blind and Physically Handicapped, simply Google or search for North Carolina Library for the Blind or call toll-free 1-888-388-2460. You can also use those same numbers and website to join the Friends of the North Carolina Library for the Blind and Physically Handicapped. It is that wonderful organization that sponsors this monthly feature on books. This program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Heard Any Good Books Lately will be available right after the broadcast at our website, trianglereadingservice.org. So long until next time.